Welcome to Hers,
His,
and Ours, part of the Scheiss Podcast Network. Season 1, Episode 8, Mistakes Were Made, Part 1. Sarah seeks to uncover a secret about Holly's daughter, Nora goes on a proper date with David, and Kevin tries to win Scotty back. Justin gets a notice to return to Army duty, and his thoughts take us back to when he first enlisted. So I guess this is the episode where...
This was rough.
It was, but this is also the one where... Sarah does the deeper investigation of Holly that we alluded to in the previous episode.
Yes.
It's tough. I do my best, but also we watch three at a time, and then when we talk about them, it's like one long episode rather than individual. So I can rely on my notes, but apparently cannot rely on them entirely.
Yes. This episode... was rough. I mean, both, I think these episodes were rough, but this one in particular, I think this is what I was, this was the episode I was alluding to that really put Kitty above a lot of the other characters for me, because this is also, you know, airing very soon after 9/11. We see a glimpse of the 9/11 experience happening, and I think everyone who was alive at that time remembers that event very vividly, very clearly, like it was yesterday. At least I still do. And the flashbacks of Kitty being in New York and, you know, her relationship with Justin at the time too, and her their closeness. It was just, it was emotionally raw. It was hard.
It was. And I was trying to think of other shows, because I'd seen movies about 9/11 afterwards, but not TV shows that dealt with it. But I also maybe was not watching as much TV right after high school and right after. I mean, this is 5 years after 9/11 happens.
I mean, I was, and I don't remember any other show bringing it into a storyline like this. I remember Friends, of course, does the tribute to, you know, the first responders. You see Joey wearing an FDNY shirt in an episode. They take the Twin Towers out of the opening sequence, and then it says, like, we'll never forget her in memory of one of those episodes.
Yeah, I don't remember that at all.
I remember that.
Well, of course, you watch a lot of Friends, but that would be like a huge event going on in Friends.
I remember it at the time, too, because it was right before the show was ending. It was the year before the series finale. And so it was very, it was like right, actually it was when season 10 first started. So it was part of the final season. Or into the final season, and I remember them taking it out of the opening sequence. You don't see the Twin Towers anymore. But as far as a storyline goes, or inner, you know, like weaving it into a character's storyline, this was the first show I remember seeing it on.
Yeah, I remember the Twin Towers being taken out of the Spider-Man trailer.
Oh, interesting.
There was a scene where he traps like a helicopter between the towers with his webs, and they took that out.
Was that the...
it was probably Spider-Man 2.
Tobey Maguire.
Yeah, Tobey Maguire. Toby.
Why was I going to say Topher Grace? Tobey Maguire.
Topher Grace was in the third one, though.
Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man?
Correct. So I remember that being a big deal because they removed it from the trailer. And then it's become interesting now that a lot of shows and movies use stock footage of when the towers were still up in order to signify that it's like
the timeline.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Very specifically, like, okay, we want to show that this is a period piece taking place before 2001. But it was a big deal to like not even show the towers.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I kind of understand, but part of me is also a little bit like that was still a very monumental piece of the New York skyline. But I understand it was probably more of a sensitivity thing, which I respect, if it was hard for people involved or like survivors or family members. I don't know. I just think it was interesting, of especially Friends being a sitcom at the time. That was the first show I remember that like drastically changed
it. Yeah. I don't think Friends could have handled a storyline where the towers came down.
No. I'm not saying they should have, but I don't think so either. For them to acknowledge taking it out of an opening sequence that hadn't really changed since the show started was pretty significant. And Joey wearing an FDNY shirt, I think probably even a couple of times, but one episode in particular, like shortly after, and then like in memory of, was at least a tribute.
Well, I'm curious about if this show was maybe written specifically in the mindset of being a show about like the falling action of 9/11, because the rift between Kitty and Nora comes from Justin's decision to enlist, which is what this episode is about. But we see that his enlistment also speaks to like who he is as
in the current timeline,
a person.
Yeah.
Reacting to Kitty's response to 9/11 coming from New York. So already I think like two of the main tent poles of the show are based specifically in reactions to 9/11. Obviously, like what's going on with Tommy and what's going on with the farm, and maybe we find out later that what Dad did with the farm money and the investment was because the stock market was falling or something, and he wanted to make sure that when this happened, you know, whatever. But already, like the two biggest, I would say, character stories of the show are directly rooted in what happened on 9/11. So.
Well, and the rift between Nora and Kitty that we learn about and see from the beginning of the series is also based on this, too.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Like, the assumption that Kitty told Justin to enlist is what Nora, like, couldn't forgive her for. And then she kind of, like, hangs her hat on that as an excuse to deride and bully Kitty about everything else, like even when it doesn't matter, it just always comes down to like, oh, you're Republican, so like that's why Nora is lower on the list now than Kitty, because it's like, you know, that's your daughter and all you do is like bully her. Like, even if you don't agree with her politically, there's a lot of points that you hang on her that like don't have anything to do with her being a Republican. Like, you just clearly have a very low opinion of your daughter and kind of pretend that you don't. But we see in this episode, where there are some flashbacks, that that wasn't the case, and that she was like distraught because Kitty was in New York. Like,
she lived a couple of blocks from the Twin Towers.
Yeah, I think she worked a couple of blocks.
No, she was living.
Oh, was she? Okay. Because she said like they felt the plane go over, right? And like she's describing feeling it, which is also like it felt weird in that like I know what the show is doing in that moment, but also like I know that like Calista Flockhart didn't do that, right? Like, well, maybe she did, maybe she lived in New York, right? But I'm curious like where the dialogue for that comes from, because are you trying to like put words to a situation that you didn't directly experience? Are these words coming from somebody who was living in New York and did directly experience this? So that's why I was curious, like, writing wise, did this show all stem out of like a 9/11 experience, and then maybe
affecting a family like this?
Yeah. Because it's very like specifically geared towards those fulcrum points of if this incident doesn't happen, maybe these other things in the family don't happen. So it feels personal and impersonal at the same time. Like, it's obviously coming from a place that is going to be personal for a lot of New Yorkers. And then, you know, growing up in California, it didn't, like, I didn't have a huge emotional reaction to it until much later. Like, as I started seeing the documentaries about it and I started, like, watching the movies about it. And when we went to Ground Zero and visited Ground Zero, like, I, you know, I broke down crying, like, as soon as we walked in. I was just like, this is horrible. Just because, like, the weight of it, you know, I had been to the Twin Towers as a kid, stood on top of the Twin Towers, and that was like my first time to New York, and then the next time was to visit Ground Zero, which is crazy. So, but for me as a Californian, like, not living there, it's a way different animal, right? Like, I think as Americans, it was very easy to understand the motivations to go to war. I think it was very easy to understand the motivations to rebuild. I think it was very easy to feel the fear that came along with knowing that that could happen basically anywhere, that, you know, this thing that we took for granted that was our safest form of travel is now gone.
Weaponized.
Yeah. And Kitty, you know, she describes that too in the show, of like being one of the only people at the airport, and there's like six people on the plane, and that, you know, what she, I forgot exactly what she said, but the passengers, they did something for the flight staff.
They thanked the flight staff for being there still. And the flight staff thanked the passengers for being on the plane. I mean, I remember afterwards, I wouldn't fly for years after that. And I remember some people having the opposite reaction of, like, you know, in the face of tragedy and like something so catastrophic, like, don't let the fear stop you from doing it. And it's true in the sense that it probably was the safest time to fly at that moment because the security was so heightened after that was able to happen. But I didn't fly for years after that. And I remember that whole week in school, but especially that day, we watched all the live footage the entire day. So while I wasn't physically there feeling it, like seeing the ash and everything, or like being in the ash, like in the rubble, being a junior or senior in high school, I'm still watching people jump out of the building to their death at the same time. And that was like core shaking, right? So it's like Kitty explaining the sound and feeling the plane hit the building and like it being kind of like an earthquake essentially, right? And she also was talking about like watching people jumping out of the building, and it's like to be in that point of not having any other choice and you're just going to kind of try and control that situation, I think resonated with pretty much anyone who was old enough to understand the weight of what was going on.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is a show that takes place in California, like a California family with one of their kids living in New York, and Nora saying, I think, to Kitty that, oh, no, like those are just like papers blowing out of the building. Kitty's like, no, those are people.
Yeah.
Because she, like, seeing it from a distance, like it doesn't look like a full person, but then, you know, Kitty being there and like hearing the people and seeing the people. And it's interesting that that is like the coastal divide is represented very specifically in the show in that way, because as much as the family was all scared for Kitty's safety and that like she was scared for her own safety, her experience of going through it was way different. Like, they just want her home and out of New York, and because like she will be safe at home. So when she finally gets there, they're all very happy that she's there. You know, she breaks down, she tells Justin this story of the experience, and it's that story that kind of shapes his view of what his responsibilities are to her and to the family. You know, as the youngest, he feels like he needs to step in and do this because, not because Kitty told him to, but because he
felt the immediate threat directly to his family.
Yeah, exactly. Because of having that conversation with Kitty. And then, so I, in my head, I'm like, well, why did Nora ever blame Kitty for that when she knows full well that Justin came in and was like, this is my decision, has nothing to do with her.
Well,
I'm doing it.
We learn later on why.
In this episode, though, right?
Was it this episode?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is.
Where she admits it was her fault?
She does, which gave Nora some bonus points back. I'll give her that. She finally got it.
I think it was...
You're fine.
Oh, are they were telling me to pause.
No.
I think it was more of... I think this was another dig at the Republican side of things with her. Because there's even a point where Kitty is like, I can no longer, like, I selfishly or I personally can't support this war anymore when it's taken so much and it's like personally affecting their lives and like putting her brother in harm's way kind of a thing. Like, now we're at a point, fast forward years later, where this is not just about 9/11 anymore. It's not just about like us fighting back. Like, the us fighting back made sense to her in the time, in the moment, but then it went too a little too far for a certain period of time, right? So I think Nora kind of pulled it out of, I think Nora was pushing on the like Republican side of things with Kitty again, like she has in other ways of like, well, because you're supporting war in general, this is your fault, not like she told him to go do it.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot to like throw away the entire relationship with your daughter over, though, when it's like that isn't really the reason. You know, she kind of just like scapegoated her, which is super unfair again to her.
Yeah.
Of all the people in the cast, like, Nora has lost the most points, I would say. Like, if everybody started at zero, Nora's just continued to like give away minus points, unfortunately. But
Sally Field, and she's just so good at it.
She is. She is. But there's a reason that, like, her kids have some issues.
Of course. Therapy 101.
Yeah. But, like, this entire episode isn't just rooted in that. There is levity. We see, like, the episode starts with Kevin messing around with his boss girlfriend at the time, right? And
Justin.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Justin is in his very nice basement apartment. Tons of square footage in there for a guy who works as like a hotel clerk.
Yeah.
Like,
he was living there before that job too.
Yeah. Well, his family's rich. So probably subsidizing that would be my guess.
And he gets a knock on the door.
This is when he gets a knock on the door.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and they hand him the
letter.
That's right. He's writing things on his girlfriend's back with his tongue, to which she tells him he has poor tongue penmanship. And I feel sorry for her. But he gets a knock on the door, and it is the army giving him a letter that says he's being recalled to active duty. Basically, it's the stop loss rule. There's an entire movie called Stop Loss, I think, with Ryan Phillippe.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It's pretty good. I watched it a few times when it came out, but also it was like convenient. It's like, hey, this is good. It's on. I'll just watch it again. But I think I do have it somewhere. Hmm. But it is about this thing of like, you've done your time and now you're done. And we see that Justin was probably in sound state of mind when he made the decision to begin with, and then after experiencing it, he's like, I can't do that again.
Well, yeah, because we've seen the fallout of what happens when you're a veteran and you don't have the support and resources that you need when you come out of the military, and he spirals. I don't blame him. He immediately turns back to substances. Yeah. The girlfriend is like, okay, I can't do this. He definitely falls off the wagon. And then it's now a scramble of how do we get him out of this?
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's one of many things that's going on in this episode. We also see that Kitty and Kev are out to brunch or something somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
And Are these the only two in the family that kind of are siblings in this way? Like, where they sort of have a friendship and hold each other accountable for things and are honest and, you know, she tells him, like, you fucked up with Scotty. Like, you treat him like shit. What did you expect?
I feel like Kitty is that person. I feel like Kitty is that sibling, but we see it. We see her with do it with Sarah early little, on.
Yeah, but
she tries. She tries, to be honest. She definitely does it with Kevin. I love her and Kevin's banter.
Yeah, they're fun together.
They're so fun.
She's like, they kind of just like are bitchy back and forth. It's fun.
It's so great. I don't remember if we see more of it with the other siblings, but I do feel like Kitty is that common denominator in the family. And I think that's why there's also so much tension with Nora, because she is the one that will push back and be like, you can't push me around. I'm going to fight back and you're going to not like what I say, but you're going to hear it anyways.
Yeah.
Where everyone else kind of tiptoes around Nora.
Yeah, they're just like, well, you know how mom is. We don't want to like get her all riled up. So let's just let's steer clear and, you know.
I mean, I think that's more common than it's not in a lot of families.
Yeah, quite possibly. This also takes us to the incident we mentioned in the last episode with the interrogation of Holly. As she sort of volunteers to help and then gets interrogated. But also from Holly's perspective, I'm like, no, the fuck, I am not going to give the family of the guy who I had an affair with access to all of my daughter's information, including her social security number. Like, get the fuck out of here. This is a ridiculous request from the Walker family. Can you just provide us with like her birthday and her phone number and her social security number and any other pertinent information that might help us find this password? Like, no, fuck off.
I mean, I understand not giving up the social, but like the birth date, it could be significant. You know what I mean?
It's not her problem, though.
It's not. That we know of.
True. At this point, we do not know that it is her problem. It's not her money situation that's on the line. She's trying to do Saul a favor by showing up and helping out. And then she's like interrogated for hours and she's pissed. And I think rightfully so. And the fact that they're asking all this of like her adult, I assume adult daughter, because those other kids are adults. I feel like it's just a lot to ask, and maybe Saul withholding the information that he has withheld to this point has forced their hand, so it's not necessarily Sarah's fault either.
I don't think it is.
But just from like a parenting perspective, if you know you're asked to just like cough over all this information on your child in order to help somebody like find a password, like, and kiss my ass.
Yeah, because we also learned in the episode before, while they're at the ranch, there's a picture, a baby picture found.
That's how they start to piece things together.
Yeah, and it's none of them. And we learn and find out that it is a baby picture of Rebecca. So obviously it's reasonable to need this information. And yeah, I mean, I feel like, again, Saul is just, he's useless.
He is, but that being said, it's like he's getting in the way on purpose, and I think he's trying to play both sides. But to Sarah's credit, she, we see her in this be like a good parent, you know, to Joe's kid, who's being a little shit, who's having issues because he's having identity issues within the family structure, and
rightfully so.
You know, so she figures out how to talk to him and wants to include him in the family and takes responsibility for not including him. And on top of that, she's running the business and she fucking figures out the password thing herself. Basically, she puts it together despite Saul's interference.
Yes. So she's trying all the combination with the kid's initials and then she thinks about Rebecca, but it's after having this conversation with Joe's son of like, hey, what were those plates that like Paige and, oh my God, what's the son's name?
Am I supposed to know the kids' names now, too?
Paige and Ethan?
Sure.
Child
one and child two.
Paige and the little brother's plates had their initials on it.
Yeah.
And he was like, hey, how do I get one of those? Or like, where did those come from? And she's like, oh, my dad made them on a certain birthday.
Light bulb.
Or it was so that they made it for them as kids, and then she did it with her kids, because then it was like, you're always responsible for your own plate. And yeah, that's when Sarah has her light bulb moment of like, oh, I should include Rebecca's initials into the password with the other five Walker kids. And that's what unlocks the accounts.
It does. So, like I said, Sarah just in like boss mode. She's cruising, like good mom stuff, you know, good business stuff, good investigative work to get that all done. She's on top of her game. So she maintains pole position here on top of the family totem pole. And then later.
But they're also through all of this, they're looking for Justin. Kitty and Nora are looking for Justin. Remember, they can't find him.
Again. That's right. He goes to, like, cop drugs in the park.
Yeah, right. And then he's missing.
Yeah. We also see Nora and David have made things official.
Mm-hmm.
They've bumped uglies, done the horizontal mambo.
What is it? Consummated the relationship?
Yes, consummation. We find out that Saul also... getting down with Holly. Yeah, so it's just this is old people doing it in this episode. But hey.
That's fine.
You know, I'm
just not a fan of either of them.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
So yeah, she unlocks it. Is this when we find out about the other property?
Yes, because it's in the files that
it's in
she
the files that she had
unlocks.
Gained
yeah,
access
I don't to. I don't think it's like the next episode is dedicated to that property, but yeah. This is where Sarah has now figured this out. She is like, all right, well, time to go fucking confront Holly and figure out what the hell's going on here. And like, all of this is messy, but on two fronts, it's
oh yeah.
I think it's like it's well on three fronts. It's kind of ugly in that number one, Sarah has figured out the password. She's figured out her dad's password, and she goes to Holly and is using that as evidence of Rebecca being William's child. To which that isn't evidence that he's the child. It's like circumstantial at best that Rebecca is his kid. But it's also entirely possible that William believed that that was his kid and it wasn't. And so she's like accosting Holly about like, well, why did putting in her initials like unlock the password? It's like, I don't know. It's a question for your dead dad, lady.
But it also could mean Holly led him to believe she
also
was his
possible,
kid.
Also possible. True. Yeah. So there's a lot of different things at play there. But then Holly being... insane, I guess.
This is why I can't stand her.
Yeah, I think she can like rightfully be upset that she was interrogated and like just wanting to be done with this family. But she explains to Sarah that if I had told your dad that Rebecca was his kid, he would have been compelled to leave you, your mom, and your siblings to take care of Rebecca. And I'm like, in what world does the mistress who's been a secret for 20 years think that that would have been the compelling thing? Like, if William was going to leave Nora, he would have left her, but he didn't want to leave her. He wanted to have Holly on the side.
Well, not only that, having Rebecca's initial work with the password means he already thought Rebecca was his kid and he didn't leave his family for them.
That's a good point.
So again, this is why I can't stand Holly. Like, it makes my blood boil so much. It does not make any sense. Like, the entitlement narcissism in that. Like, yeah, the narcissism in that. Like, grand speech that she puts for Sarah and Saul is like, but in what world do you think that would be the case, that he would leave his five kids and wife when he already assumed she was his daughter and why her initial was part of his password.
Yeah. In birth order as well, which is...
So she's the youngest.
She's the youngest, yeah.
Which means they were already together for however many years when she got pregnant with her.
Yeah.
Yes, still could not be his. But again, like I said, she's also so manipulative herself that she's either, even if she wasn't his kid, she still was perfectly happy and content with making him think she was.
Well, what have we seen at this point to make Holly manipulative? Because I feel like all we've seen of Holly's character right now is that, like, yes, she's the mistress, but for the most part, she's been played pretty sympathetically in that she was the side woman in the relationship, but she loved William. William loved her. Sure, she could have, you know, gone to Nora and maybe, like, not made a mess out of things. But from what I've seen from her, she's never done anything, like, vindictive at this point.
I mean, I think this is the moment we see it, because she also goes on to talk about how, you know, Sarah's like, what is all of the secrecy for? And she's like, oh, Rebecca doesn't know. So she's been lying to Rebecca her entire life about who her father possibly could be, and is letting her daughter think that instead of, and keeping her from potentially having like an actual family. So instead of her thinking like William's actually going to leave his whole family, and she didn't want that to happen for his family, even though she was the side piece or the mistress for however long, she also was making sure Rebecca didn't leave her for wanting to be part of that family.
Okay.
That's my opinion.
Okay. Well, that's why I asked.
All right. Well, there you go.
And meanwhile, Saul is sitting there in the background watching this conversation unfold, and they keep cutting to his face, and he's got to look like, oh, shit is heating up. And I love that Sarah is just like, I want to be done with your ass. And then she looks at Saul, and she's like, you got a decision to make, old man, and storms out. So again, Sarah climbing the ladder. She's not climbing the ladder. She's at the top. She's just...
Yeah. Plus, I also feel like I said early on with Holly, like, she's fully aware William has an entire family, and yet she still plays along with this.
Yeah. I mean, that happens in life.
It does.
It does.
That's what I'm saying. Like, she's not innocent or sympathetic. Like, you're knowingly taking him away from his family already.
That's on Williams, though. He's the one with the family who has the decision to make of whether or not he's going to abuse his position.
I agree, but it is on both of them. She's not innocent in this scenario. It takes two to play this relationship.
I mean, it does, but that's like in the situation and like, you know, the shows like Maury Povich or Jerry Springer or Cheaters, where it's like, you catch the person that your partner is cheating with, and then you're mad at the person that they cheated with instead of being mad at the partner. Where I feel like William is the one to blame in this situation.
He's, of course, the one to blame, but I don't think she's innocent because she is aware of the situation where a lot of the times the mistresses are told there isn't another family. And she is aware of the family because she's saying, well, I didn't want to tell him about Rebecca because then I wouldn't want him to be compelled to leave you guys. Like, that in itself is like she's just as guilty. She's not super innocent. She may not be 100% at fault, obviously, but she's not super innocent because she's fully aware. Versus like if William had never told her that this other family existed and he led a double life, which we see happens a lot. I watch a lot of true crime documentaries. That's icky. And like, yeah, you can't blame them.
And we don't know what William told her. Because we don't see them together, really.
We don't, but she's aware of them. Because she knows when she sees Nora, like, oh, shit.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, it could be William doing that thing of like, you know, I'm unhappy and my marriage sucks and this and that. And I'm planning on leaving my wife. And like a lot of cheating men do. So, to me, I was like, Holly was not presented as like the villain necessarily.
Not in the beginning, no. That's why I feel like this is the pivotal moment.
Okay. We'll see. Because I was like, you've been very like anti-Holly and you hate her so much. And I've just been like, well, like I'm curious because I don't think anything she's done so far is like to make her hateable.
I mean, she goes to that family dinner where Nora exposes her.
She was invited by Nora.
She was, but she knows, like, what her role has been. And she thinks, like, oh, it's
she
just...
probably should have declined.
Yeah,
but...
she should have declined. But that's what I'm saying. Like, she is more aware than I think, like, most would be potentially in this kind of a situation.
Maybe.
Who knows? Anyways, moving on.
Moving on. I mean, that's pretty much the end of the episode is when Sarah confronts
Holly. No, it's not.
What do you mean it's not?
Justin.
Yeah. Oh, he ODs at the end of the episode. Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I said I see this was why this was part one, because his OD is like the cliffhanger going into the next episode.
They find him and he's OD'd.
Correct. That's right.
And they get him to the hospital.
But he's in his apartment when they find him, right?
They find him. They call 911. They rush him to the hospital. And then they're all waiting in the hospital to find out if he's going to make it or not.
Yeah. And then I think Nora's flashback wig.
Oh, yeah. You made a comment under your breath, I feel like.
I was like, I know that they need to establish that, like, this is another timeline. But, like, everybody looks the same except for her. And they just gave her, like, a bad wig. And they're like, okay, well, this was clearly, like, 4 years ago because her hair. and I was like, why did they do that to her? They didn't have to.
They didn't. I mean, they could have just... Yeah, I don't know, because it wasn't... They were trying to portray her as much younger, too, which is weird.
That's what stood out to me, is, like, the choice of the wig was meant to communicate youth, and it's like, this was only 5 years prior anyway. It's not like she was 15 years younger. Like, what is the hair supposed to be communicating to us?
But actually, I don't remember if there's a year... Like, if there's a timeline or year marker in the season, we just know that it airs in 2006. Yeah, like, do they say it is 2006?
No, I'm just operating under the assumption that it's 2006. But, yeah, you're right. I just, you know, wig alert.
I know, you and your wigs. But I am curious now. I'll have to pay attention, because even the flashback with Kitty after 9/11 happens... And then they go back to present time. Like, I don't know if we ever established, like, what year it actually is.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because obviously that, too, I think was before Sarah's kids were born.
I have not seen an iPhone yet. I saw Kevin take a picture of something with, like, a Motorola flip phone. So it's probably 2007-8-ish at the latest.
Okay, so then this
But I would say there's no reason to think it's not 2006.
Yeah, it's not late enough after 2001 for that kind of wig.
Yeah, we're not bouncing back into the 80s where it's like, oh, her hair needs to be drastically different. Like, just change her hair color at that point and be like, yeah, you know.
Like, dye her hair a little bit and then let her, like, wash it out or something.
Comb it differently and, like, pin it to the other side and be like, that's what she was doing. I don't know. You know me and my wig.
I know,
sensitivity.
You and your wigs.
All right. Well, that's quite a cliffhanger for the middle of that season, because I think we're almost at the halfway point of the season.
Oh, and so I was wrong. These two episodes were back to back before the Thanksgiving break.
Oh, okay.
I thought we had to wait in between them. But this must have been, like, the two-part mid-season finale that they would call it now.
That's not the finale.
Mid-season finale. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, we'll be back for episode 9. Catch you laters.
Bye. Thanks for listening to Hers, His, and Ours. We'd love for you to continue on this journey with us. The easiest way to do that is to like and subscribe to the show on the podcast platform of your choice. Follow our socials at Hers, His, Ours, spelled like time, on Instagram and X. To keep tabs on this show and others in the Scheist Podcast Network, follow at Scheist Podnet on Instagram, Blue Sky, and X.